Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me. Today on American Glutton Podcast, we welcome Jeff Beecher. Jeff Beecher is an American producer, entrepreneur, and master of ceremonies who created, produced, and hosted the long-running live theater series Beecher's Madhouse. Jeff Beecher has gone through a radical physical transformation, and I'm so excited to have this conversation for you. Jeff Beecher, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
It's an honor, Ethan, to have me here.
Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
I've known you a long time, and we have both undergone kind of radical physical transformations.
How much did you lose total?
That is tricky because I lost a bunch of weight, and then I gained a shitload back, and then I lost again. So if you just want from my heaviest to now, that's a number. But from my heaviest to my lightest, and then back up really heavy again, and then back down.
Let's just throw numbers out so your fans can just understand quickly.
Heaviest to lightest?
Yeah.
Heaviest was, I believe I was heavier than this, but the heaviest I ever was on a freight scale. I was 536.
Wow.
But I'm pretty sure I gained weight
from the scale.
There.
See, people don't understand how the scales, even electronic ones, stop after a certain number.
Yeah. No, this was like a shipping scale. It was gigantic, yeah. And you had to add
weights to it. I used to go through that all the time. My scales wouldn't work. And then I got an electric one. The electric one stopped at like 300 or something like that. It was crazy.
I mean, I remember as a kid, I don't even think you'd see 300 on a scale. Like, people just didn't get that big.
No, I never in a million years. I remember as a kid, I would like, when I started gaining weight, I'd be like, all right, just don't break 200. Just don't break. Then it was like, don't break 250. Then don't break 300. Yeah. Don't break 350. And I was like, what the fuck?
I'm
dead.
All those milestones.
Yeah. It's crazy. 400. I broke 400, bro. No, was it 340? No, I broke 400.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those wonderful things you have in your head that you will never get rid of. It's going to be with you forever. Like me, I'm going to have these fucking figures in my head forever, which is part of the motivation to keep going, I think.
Yeah. So you were at 530 and you got down to what?
The lightest I ever was around 200, just over 200.
So it's 330 pounds.
Yeah, but I'm—
That's fucking impressive.
260 right now.
But that's, you're stacked the muscle. But 16% body fat.
I had to go back up to around 400 and then come back down to 260.
Bro, I've been fat and skinny up until 2014 when I actually changed my life, which we can get into in a little bit. I was fat and skinny 10 times. I mean—
Yeah.
It's when you finally make the decision to change your brain. I don't know, with you, with me, it was all about my brain. You know, your head's right and your body gets right.
Yeah. So what was it in 2014 that did it for you?
Oh, it was a lot. I mean, I had a mental breakdown in 2008 and I had like one little one in between with like a day or two. The one in 2008 was 6 months and that got me skinny. So I went from like, I think I was 350, 370 to like 200, 210. And I was like, woo. And then I went on tour. And that ironically, it was right around the recession. So I guess it was a lot to do with the stress from having a show and having whatever I wanted in Las Vegas to like, I'll never forget this meeting. My accountants were like, you have no money. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just do a show. They're like, no one's hiring. Like, there's no shows. It's over. It's done. And I was like, I'll book shows. I'll book shows. Cause you know, book a show, you make 50, 150 grand cash net, you know? And, they were just like, no one's booking you. And I was like, what do you mean I have no money? Like, I can't just do a show and make money? Because my whole life I was able to do a show and make money.
Yeah.
And then it was over. So I'm home, I'm depressed, I was miserable. And then, you know, one day I get a call and I start going on a tour, start making a lot of money. And I was like, but it was like, let me see, it's 2008. Yeah, I mean, I was home with like no money for a good 6-7 months. Like just a mess, crying, total disaster. And then I didn't work on my brain. I just worked on my body, but I lost the weight, but it was just like I coated up the problems.
Right.
And then I went on a crazy busy business run, just selling out the show, 2.5 years on the road. We crushed it. And then we went to LA and went back to Vegas. And I was back in Vegas in 2014. And that's when I was like, shit, like the business was, my partner died the week we were opening. That ran the operations and was like he was like an older brother to me and a visionary and just genius. And anyway, he passed away from a heart attack running on the beach. And then I was just left with like doing the whole thing for the business all by myself.
I don't know your partner. Was he a healthy guy or?
Incredibly healthy.
So just a random heart attack on the beach.
He was running 7 miles every morning. Like
And then just dropped dead one day.
Yeah.
Were there other factors?
No, nothing. He's a great guy. I mean, was a great guy. Created the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He had a big management company, producer, director, like just dope guy.
Right.
Jeff Pollock was his name.
That's awful.
And yeah, anyway, so that was that. And then I was stuck doing that all by myself. And that was just a disaster. And I had to run the show. So October 2014, I took a month off, which is like, you can't run a show and like take a month off. But little Donnie, the little person, he ran the show, which to everyone's surprise, he did an unbelievable job producing all month with me gone and emceeing it. And he curved his alcohol and drug addiction a little bit to help run the company.
So right.
I was really proud of him. With that said, I went to this vegan retreat in Florida called Hippocrates. It's very extreme. It's raw vegan and it's not for everybody. But what I did was I went there. I didn't know where to go. It was either get the stomach surgery. Back in 2008, I left out of bar. I went to a rehab, but I don't even do drugs. I went to a rehab for like mental depression and like anxiety I was getting and all this. And I'll never forget leaving the rehab. It was crazy because like my best friend put me there. And he was like, why are you leaving? It's crazy. Why are you leaving? And I was like, bro, I'm like, this place is like, they had me in like therapy and all this fucked up shit. And they like asked me to go to AA meetings and I don't even drink that much. Like it was just weird. And so I punched out of that, but I went through the cycle and like understood it. So back to 2014, my friend's like, you got to do something. Like, you know, you're out of control again. And I was 440, I think was my... So it was like 440 or something, or maybe I lost a little bit of weight. It was 4 something. I can get the exact documents, but it was way over 400. And I went through all the different options. Do I go to a rehab? Do I get, you know, mental health? Do I get this? Do I get that? And a buddy of mine went to this place where it's like a full life reboot. And they teach you how to do raw vegan. You go to meditation. You do therapy. And you do all this stuff. So I went there. And for the first time ever since I was like 16, I actually spent a month just worrying about myself, my body, my brain, and getting my shit together. And I did it incredibly successfully. I lost 40 pounds that month. And I started doing therapy, which I never did before. Started meditating. I started like really learning about food. I was living in hotels. I don't know if you knew this, but I lived in hotels for about 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I lived in the Hard Rock. I lived in, you know, hotel suites whenever I was traveling and touring. But like I lived in the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas for 5 years. I lived in the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood for 5 years. And I didn't just live in them. I was the face of them. And I was the headliner in those cities at the hottest thing at those times, you know? So I was living a crazy party life. I lived in the Mirage, I lived in the MGM in Vegas. Like, it was incredible times. It's hard not to.
When you were working in Vegas, did you never have the urge to buy a house? Or you just, I mean, like...
Things I understand now, like owning homes and real estate, I didn't understand when I was the Jeff Beecher running Beecher's Madhouse.
Yeah, but I don't even mean from an investment standpoint.
No, like, just as every standpoint.
I would go to your event... Mm-hmm. And definitely enjoy myself. But there's a point where I want to escape and like go do something else. I feel like if you're at the hotel, you're never escaping.
My escape was to go run and create Peaches Madhouse, you know,
right.
Create the greatest live show of all time.
Right.
That's what my escape was, to do that. And I didn't realize that till I went to this vegan place in Florida in October 2014. You know, I was like, oh, shit, I got to make a change. You know, and then right after that, I went to my buddy who was the president of the hotel. And I was just like, look, I got to get out of this deal, you know. And he was like, all right, you know, we'll meet again. And he's an awesome, awesome guy and one of my best friends. And he let me out of the deal and it took a long time, but we got out of it. And it's a 20-year deal at the MGM.
Wow.
Yeah, but I needed to do this to focus on my health and myself. And right now I'm vegan. Like during quarantine, I was vegan. I've lost 25 pounds so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I started traveling a lot for work around countries. And I do, right after I stopped being a headliner in Vegas, I started working for Airbnb. And I was the entertainment relations consultant. So I did all the celebrity relations for this company. And I came in at a great time. It was, you know, taking off and they're already worth billions and billions of dollars. And the crew was great. And my good friend is one of the founders. And anyway, it was an incredible run we had there. And I was with them for about 3.5 years as a consultant. And I just started traveling around the world. But as I started traveling a lot, I put on a little bit of weight, a little bit of weight, a little bit of weight. And then the last year was a lot. And that's when I gained like 40 pounds back.
Yeah. And you're halfway through getting rid of that during the quarantine.
Yeah. I didn't commit mentally. I dropped 240 and I really needed to lose another 20, 25 pounds. And I knew how hard it was and I was really enjoying being, you know, 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to not be that 200 pounds and wait, you know, I sacrificed for so long just to get back to healthy.
Yeah.
And alive and like, no, I'm not dead. I mean, I don't know if you went through this, but like when I was so fat, I would literally like be like, am I fucking alive? Like, I remember seeing like little Donnie and like my dog in Vegas, like stuck on the balcony and like being like, is this fucking real? There's dog shit everywhere. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on in my life? Like, it was just crazy. It was just crazy. It was really crazy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I was alive or dead. And that was a weird feeling that I would get a lot when I was like really, really fat. Like, is this real? Am I alive? Am I dead? Did you ever feel like that?
I mean,
you also didn't have like little people in like a total circus show around you 24/7.
Yeah, I wasn't living in a dream.
Yeah.
I was, but I think I know what you're saying. I mean, I think just like what my idea of what normal life was, I couldn't relate. Like, I had a vision of what normal real life was, and that wasn't my life. And I always wanted to be normal and never felt normal. But I still don't feel normal. I still feel like I look at people like who I project normalcy on, and I go, that person knows what it is to live in the manner that I think is right, you know, and they're not constantly thinking about food and if they ate too much or if they didn't eat too much. Like, it's not a thing following them around, but I think it will be for me. So
you didn't have addiction problems with other
things? No, I did.
Things?
Yeah, I totally did. Yeah, I'm sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just the food. It was for me anyway, you know, everyone's different, but for me, it was a lot of things, you know, and like, I would always say, oh, I don't do cocaine. And like, for being up at night in that environment was a big deal. Obviously, a lot of people do. And I'm like, oh, I don't do blow. I don't do the drugs. I don't do that. I don't do this. But I take a sleeping pill every night.
Right.
You know, that's a drug.
Yeah.
But I would not, in my head, it didn't think like it was a drug because it's prescribed by a doctor.
Right.
But it's still a drug.
Sure.
You know, oh, I drink a vodka Red Bull or I drink, you know, a light beer or whatever. And I get buzzed or I get like hammered and I'd be like, well, it's fine. It's just liquor.
Yeah.
So I just eat. I drank. I took a sleeping pill. And oh, I eat again. You know, I live in hotels, order room service, not exercise because I'd be hungover the next day. So I was eating, drinking, and I was gambling. And I lived in casinos.
You know? Right.
So those for vices, that's enough.
It's a lot of vices.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found that I could try and transfer my kind of propensity towards addiction. Like, for a long time, I rode bicycles in an addictive way. And now I lift weights potentially in an addictive way, and I count and weigh my food in a potentially addictive way. But I think these addictions or habits that I'm cultivating are more geared towards long-term survival, whereas many of the other addictions were geared towards death at some point.
Yeah.
But caffeine is a drug. I still have caffeine. You know, I'm not 100% drug free, I guess, in that sense, you know?
Right.
But it's better.
Or cheese. Cheese is a drug.
Sure.
Cheese triggers the opiatic receptors in your brain.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I haven't eaten real cheese in a long time. That's why
people
love cheese.
Think about like how crazy people go for pizza and cheese. I have my vegan cheese, so I'm good.
Does it do the same thing?
I do vegan cheese as much as I can, even when I'm like off vegan. Right now, I think I'm going to be vegan for a good amount of time.
Will it hit the same receptors, vegan cheese? Is it just molecules?
I'm not like a scientist, but
right.
I don't know if it tastes good to me. People don't like it. Some people love it. I don't know. I love it.
The only cheese I've had in a long time has been fat-free cheese, and I got to say it does really little to nothing for me. I think it's got to be the fat that
hits. I really love cheese, and like, you know, if you look at, you know, right now after I lost all the weight, I don't know if you have this problem, but I have this problem now. If I eat shitty, I sneeze. Like, I'll literally sneeze 10 or 15 times.
Yeah.
Do you have that also?
I have, yeah.
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 So, like, if I eat bread or if I eat cheese and I eat a lot of it, I'll start sneezing. So my body now, like, puts me in check.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like shit if I eat bad. It's really cool.
I don't have it with carbohydrates right now. I have started eating carbohydrates again to give me energy in the gym, and I haven't had it. But I know what you're saying. Like, I think if I ate a donut right now, I would feel shit.
No, it's shitty food. Like, if you eat meat or chicken, I'm sure, you know, that's healthy. I'm sure your body's, well, mine anyway. Yeah. If I eat, like, that stuff, if I eat too much, I don't feel good. But, like, if I eat shit, I sneeze and I get sick. Instantly.
Yeah.
It's like gross and annoying. And so you're just like, all right, I don't want to. And this happened up until like right, literally 2 days before I got quarantined, whatever, 30, 40 days ago that was. I was at, Catania eating shitty, and I sneezed. And I sneezed on my best friend, Jeff Ross, the comedian. And I sneezed on him, and I was like, and he's like, dude, what the fuck? You just sneezed on me. I'm like, he's like, it's Corona. I was like, relax, bro. Like, you're not going to get it. And then like 4 days later, I'm locked in my house in the quarantine because a friend of mine got it, and I literally lost my mind. And anyway, but I sneezed on him from the eating. I was eating like shitty sushi.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I did a 2 month liquid diet at one point, and when I came out of it,
60 days.
60 days. Oh. It might have actually been 80 days.
What weight stage? Did you do all water, or did you mix it up?
No, I had protein shakes, but it was like 400 or 500 calories a day. Very little.
But what were you weighing at?
That was 540 down to like 460.
My first diet too was juices, green juice.
Yeah.
I did green juice.
Coming out of that, when I was transitioning onto solid food, I had a whole list of shit I couldn't eat. And one of the things on there was vinegar. And I was like, I'm going to have a salad. And then I was like, how is vinegar something I shouldn't eat? Like that they say not to eat when you come back on. And I was like, that's bullshit. I'm just going to have vinegar. So I made a little dressing, put it on my salad, ate the salad, and then had the weirdest reaction. I was sneezing. I had fucking goop coming out of my eyes. Like I'd blink and my vision would go blurry. Listen, today it would take so much to create a reaction. I don't know if it was vinegar. I can eat vinegar every day now and nothing happens to me. But at that point, coming out of it for whatever reason, when I ate after not having eaten for 2 months, I had some crazy reactions. Now I've been tested, blood tested for allergies. I have no proper allergies like that they can discern from a scientific method. But I do remember eating this salad and having crazy physiological reactions, which sounds to me like what you're talking about. You know, if you clean your system out so much and then enter in something, who knows? You could have crazy reactions like that.
Yeah. And it ties, in my opinion, it ties into your brain too. Like when your body's all clogged up and it's all toxic, that really affects the way you think also.
Yeah.
You know, I learned that over the, you know, since 2014. I mean, it's been 6 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
That I've lost. It took me, how long did you do it until?
Well, I did the first 80 pounds was quick. I lost 80 pounds in 2 months. And then I added food in and weight loss slowed down a lot, but I continued to lose weight down to about 300 or just under 300. And then I gained some back again up to about 400. And then I lost again to 200. And then I gained back to 400. And now I'm at 260.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was 440. I went down to 190. So I was down to 250 to be exact.
Yeah.
And then I went back up to 245. And then I just lost 25. So, you know, I want to lose about another 40 and just get ripped. No, really, that's what I'm going to do.
I love getting ripped. Yeah. It's my favorite thing right now.
Yes, I haven't been ripped in so fucking long.
It's the best.
I haven't had stomach abs since, like, I had to cut out my intestines when I was in, like, my early 20s. I lost, like, a foot of one of the intestines.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think that had any effect on weight gain?
No, zero. I gained weight because I was a fucking animal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you're now mostly vegan.
Right now, I'm pure vegan.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it for a little while. There's not like, I haven't drank liquor in a long time. After that, I was doing like once a month, I was drinking liquor.
Yeah.
You know, then it became twice. And it was becoming like 2-3 times a week to the end, to the last like couple months. And I was like, all right, you're out of control.
Yeah.
And I pulled together.
When you talk about changing your brain, what do you mean? Like, what are the steps that you take to change your brain?
Well, I started by just doing a couple of therapy sessions, and it was like night and day.
Yeah.
Just happier, more at peace, more like understanding of why I had certain thoughts and why I didn't have certain thoughts, and just kind of rewiring my brain. And I just did it a couple times, and I never did it before. I never saw a therapist. And, you know, I grew up, my parents both died when I was young, and I created this crazy show, and you can call it the word materialistic or superficial or whatever, but, you know, it was what it was. And that was, the show was my family. So you say, why would you do it, you know, 24/7? Well, the show became my family. The people on the show became my family, and it was just a nonstop 24/7 thing. So I never had time to think or do anything by myself because I was always constantly surrounded by, you know, hundreds of people, literally.
Yeah. So you go to therapy, you figure out what you're doing. Are there physical steps that you have to take?
No, I mean, now I can advise someone based on what I did, but everyone's really different. You know, I mean, it worked for me.
Yeah.
And this place, like, a friend of mine went to this place in Florida. That's where I heard of it. And he also lost like over 200 pounds, turned his life around, was upside down financially, everything, and then came out of this place and turned his business around, turned his health around, everything. He went raw vegan for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But
one of the things I love about you is you say you have a big, big social media following, and you say, DM me and I'll call you or I'll come meet you. And that is a message to everyone.
Yeah. So it took me forever to get like the right advice from friends. Everyone says lose weight, but you know, you hear that when you're fat, you hear that 10, 20 times a day, everyone around you, you know, and that doesn't, it doesn't work. Lose weight, tuck, you know, suck it up, you know, come on, eat right. It's just, you know, try telling a drug addict, like, you're not going to give them drugs and it's right in front of them. You're not allowed to do it, but here, look, take a look at it. You know, the food's everywhere.
Yeah.
And they market it to you every second of every day. And so the reason why I help all those people is, you know, and the last couple months, I haven't even done the before and afters. I just did it recently because I lost like a significant amount of weight, but I was embarrassed for myself because I didn't finish the job I told everyone. But prior to that, I was posting that. And then I figured, you know, if I talk to everyone or meet with them or do whatever I can do, you know, it was just give people guidance. And I have like a lot of friends that either got the stomach surgery that convinced to get it or lost weight naturally. And a lot of people that just follow me, that I'm just meeting, they're like, you're an inspiration and I found you, or my friend told me about you and, you know, thank you. And I talk to, you know, 30, 50 people a month.
Yeah.
You know, it's
huge, dude.
It's a lot. You know, some people follow up with me. Some people call me back, you know, a couple months later, like I lost 100 pounds. Some, you know, it's cool. It's like a little weight loss, health and wellness army out there.
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, Michael Malice, the other day. And he said something like, here's a mind fuck. You have saved someone's life. And I was like, no, I don't want that. I don't want to feel that kind of responsibility. And he was like, you have, think about it. If you've inspired one person to change, you've saved their life. And I said to him, well, here's my mind fuck back to you. What if I've killed someone? What if someone was so inspired, they went and did, you know, something and had an adverse effect? I don't want that either. And I have trouble wrapping my head around the idea of helping people and telling, because like you said, people are all different. So I get asked a lot.
No,
like,
I get emotional. I used to get emotional about it. And then I went to a friend of mine who does like all sorts of like drug rehab and weight loss and overeating and all that. And I said, look, in the beginning when I first started doing it, he was like, I'm like, why, you know, how come I'm not getting good effects? He goes, because you don't have a group. And he goes, people need a lot of times a support group around them.
Yeah.
So then the last three quarters, I would say, here's a doctor, here's a coach, here's a this, here's, and I kind of set up like a team around these people.
Yeah.
I guess the next phase would be setting up the Beachers group, you know, which I probably will do. But right now I set up like a whole team around everyone when I give them advice.
Yeah.
I say, hey, call this therapist, call this doctor, or find your own therapist, or call this doctor, or find your own doctor that does this. And
the group is really important, I think.
Yeah.
My group in the beginning was just my wife. It was kind of me and my wife. And another problem I run into is having people ask me, where should I start? And I just go like, look, I'm not a diet advocate. I'm not a specific. I think dieting.
Oh, so I've been
great.
Like studying, because I've really been like trying to figure out. It's so hard to figure out like what could you tell people to do that would have got you. You know, mm-hmm. What would have sold you? And what I see is everything's very complex. To really lose the weight and keep it off, it's very complex, and you got to do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So you just hit one thing. If you can just like knock out soda, you know, then the next thing, you know, start drinking green juice. That's what green juice, no sugar. And then you incorporate that, and you start getting rid of one thing. Maybe that's a week, and then incorporate another thing. And it's a slow, steady curb. You can go hardcore, you know, if you're really obese and lose that 20 to 40 or 50 pounds a month for 2-3 months.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can hit a wall, and then you got to say, okay, what's this? And
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, where are you? Cause we're not all the same. So you could have somebody starting who's morbidly obese, who could do something more radical than a dude who just wants to lose 30 pounds, which would be a different program, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. That's what I did to myself. Like after I lost the initial going raw vegan, yeah, you drop a ton of weight, but then it hit a wall. But I lost about, from that October to the following year, I lost 200 and change, something like that.
Wow.
So it was all in 1 year. I did it really.
Wow.
Yeah. I was dropping like 15 to 25 a month every month.
Yeah. That's insane. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
I was rarely very dedicated to the process.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. So you went straight through with no breaks. Was the kind of the idea of maintenance is tough then?
No, my break came at 200. I was like, fuck it. I'm at 200. Like, this is like a weight off my shoulders, you know? Yeah. And I was just stoked. And I was like, this is cool. My body's good. I'm good. I'm in like 36 jeans or whatever. I was not 35. I don't remember. I was like, holy shit. I'm at these since like after high school and college, you know?
Yeah.
I'm good. Like, I'm good. And then I just, you know, I drank once a month. I would eat maybe a little bit of bread every day. Or when I eat Craig's, I'd eat some bread or, you know, not eating perfectly, but I'd eat and enjoy life. And I'd let the food define me in the past. And now I just let it be like, you know, a little bit like a chapter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I did for a long time. And then it just got out of control again the last couple of months.
Yeah.
But I reined it in. That's the difference between me now and me in the past. Me in the past would let it go out of control. It would break through barriers. I go back up to 500, 600. Me now stops it, says, all right, freeze, chill.
Yeah. And that's what you're talking about when you're talking about changing your brain.
So, because I rewired my brain to be at peace with everything and at peace with myself and happy and healthy. And I have so many tricks with that, you know, like stupid, easy, simple, cheesy stuff where like I have a journal. So I wake up in the morning and I write before I go to sleep. And before, first thing in the morning, three, you know, my daily goals, right? So I write three things that I'm happy about.
Yeah.
And then I write three things that would make today better. And then at night I write, you know, why I write, what did I accomplish, you know, stuff like that. It's like a simple journal.
That's huge. That's awesome.
Yeah. And they say in like 30 days, if you do that every day, it reprograms your brain to be happy. You're waking up and you're going to sleep. The last thing you do is you think happy thoughts.
Right.
And listen, I don't know, it would have worked for me. So I keep doing it.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I love anything like that, where it's like, do this simple thing, see how it goes. It helped me.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm actually making a journal to like, cause like the ones I buy online, they have some stuff and missing others. Like for mine, I'd love to have like work stuff in there too. So it's like my brain and like positive stuff about work and goals and all that. So I'm just, you know, I work on that. And then I have like, all the food things that I incorporate into the nighttime, like certain cutoff times, like stop eating, I stop drinking juice or anything and just go to water and just like a lot of little tricks I learned along the way.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. What are some other tricks? Because I think I'm going to try that journaling.
Well, the journal's amazing. That's for mental health. Another thing, I mean, you know, this gets expensive, but you can also do it on apps. There's a lot of apps with guided meditation. I love guided meditation.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a guy that I do it with out of the place in Florida. But there's apps that friends of mine use. I don't know the names of them off the top of my head, but this guy makes me a personalized guided meditation, but it's very similar to like the apps where I've listened to them and, you know, it's an hour of someone focusing on something for you.
Yeah.
Whether it's sleep or whatever. I recently just got off sleeping pills. That's a huge.
Yeah.
I mean, my body's most healthy when there's nothing in it. And when I was traveling, I got addicted to them again and I needed them to go to sleep. And I literally just got off of them.
Was that rough getting off?
No. It's fine. It was just like I had to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I set a goal, said three quarters of one, a half of one, a quarter of one, these amount of days and done. And then the second I was done.
Yeah. That's awesome. I have not had a huge amount of willpower with that kind of thing. I've been successful with like all or nothing. I'm going to take them all or I'm going to take none of them. And I'm just going to suffer. I won't sleep for a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is. And then I'll be over it, you know? But I think the way you're talking about doing it is certainly a saner, more rational way of doing it, you know?
Totally.
Setting out a plan, following your plan.
Look, I was also very insane on these things, you know? So, you know, I'm really happy. Like right now, my body is, it's in a perfectly healthy zone. Nothing's going in it that's not perfectly healthy. That's a little extreme for a lot of people. So, you know, I'm going to do it at least for the next couple of months. And then maybe I'll do a hybrid between mostly vegan, semi-raw vegan, and a little bit of something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm going to go all vegan. I'm taking an online vegan class right now. So I'm going to see how that goes, where I learn all about it.
And learning about the practice how to cook. Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like a culinary
and make thing. It grow sprouts, the whole nine.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to try it and we'll see how it goes.
Do you do raw vegan? Is that what you do?
I mean, right now, sometimes I've done it. I've done it when I was in the place. They're all vegan there. It's very extreme.
One of my wife's, I think her cousins or her aunt or somebody was super into that. And she had like a special kind of an oven that never got above 100.
A dehydrator. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that, which is like a workaround to, you're not actually cooking it. So you're, the nutrients are still there, but it's.
Yeah. It's hard. It's a lot. Like being vegan's expensive. Being raw vegan's expensive. It takes a long time, like, to learn it and understand it and get all new stuff. But, you know, if you take that money and you spread it out and you put it against like medical bills for being unhealthy, it kind of, you're making money.
You know, this is a crazy point that you bring up in a way. But when we think about, the word privilege is thrown around a lot nowadays. You know, it's a hot button word, like the social justice warriors will throw the word privilege. And the reality is, in America, being lean and healthy is a privilege, because it actually does require more money to get your hands on the less nutrient dense foods. Like, I knew a guy who was drinking soda literally because it was cheaper than water. Like a 2 liter, he would buy a 2 liter thing of soda. And when I asked him about it, I was like, dude, you're drinking, that's 1,000 calories. You're just drinking mindlessly. Water's zero cal. Like, what are you doing? And he said, this is cheaper than a bottle of water, which was so hard for
me
to.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? You go into the store and the cheapest food has a lot of energy in it, you know, packed with fat and sugar, and not necessarily packed with protein, but I guess there's some in there too. But so the idea of, like, you know, I had one of my wife's friends said, everybody should just eat pastured eggs. And I was like, you're spending $16 on a dozen eggs. Can everybody afford to spend $16 on a dozen eggs? I don't think that's realistic. So really, like, getting that super not processed food is a bit of a privilege in America. You know, being lean is a bit of a privilege. It's a wild concept.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's like, you know, but at the end of the day, it works.
Sure.
And it works a lot better than eating shitty.
I totally agree. Like, the majority of my food that I eat is organic, or it's got very little ingredients, and takes time to prepare, and it's not the cheapest stuff you can get. You know, I am totally with you.
Yeah.
It works.
No, it totally does. And, you know, I look at, it also worked when I was a complete animal, you know, in drinking and eating, and that got my career to a certain point, but I should have been dead.
Right.
Like, I literally should have been dead. And there was multiple things that happened to me aside from the mental breakdown that where I should have been dead. And I didn't. And I always thought I was going to die in my mid 30s, you know, and then I just thought, all right, you're still alive. You're still alive. Then it's like my late 30s. And I'm like, all right, God's giving you another chance. You
yeah.
know? Don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
And that's when I went to that place, and I was like, all right, I'm going to totally leave my entire life of this glamorous living in hotels and having the greatest event theater, you know, company in the world, and the most fun, not the greatest, because there's a lot bigger companies, but, you know, the most fun one. And it was an incredible experience, but if I kept going that way, I would have been dead. So I had to make a drastic change.
Yeah. And so that was 2014. That was the end of the madhouse. And what have you been doing since then? You worked for Airbnb?
Yeah, I consulted for them. Incredible company, incredible run. Did all their celebrity relations.
And what are you doing now? Are you allowed to talk about it?
I work for a lot of countries. And
I mean, that's a crazy thing to say, Veacher.
Yeah.
You work for a lot of countries. That's a crazy thing to say. Are you a spy?
No, I'm not kidding. A spy. We do consulting.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's great. Get to travel the world. And, you know, and now what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to figure out which businesses I want to get to in the health world, make that part of my official DNA, lose the final weight, get down to the 175, the 180 range, and just be jacked and ripped and happy and healthy and stay that on the road, which I've never been able to sustain, you know, that healthy, perfectly healthy diet, or not say diet, lifestyle, while I'm on the road. And instead of making it a diet where I'm dieting, I want to change my lifestyle to, this is my new lifestyle. This is it. Just like I was with eating and drinking and gambling. Here's my new lifestyle. Here's what I do in my new life. That's it. Stop fucking around.
And create a template too. Like you talked about the Beecher Group. I personally, I don't know like when I go away to work, I spent months out of Los Angeles last year working, and those are the hardest for me. And similarly, this quarantine has been difficult because I am great with a schedule. If I can plan out my week and like Monday, this is what I'm doing. Tuesday, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to eat. This is when I'm going to exercise. This is when I'm going to see my kids. Like I can do anything if it's scheduled out. But the minute you throw uncertainty into it, I get nervous that I'm going to make bad decisions.
And I used to get the same exact way. And now I've just gotten over that. I'm just like, you know, I got to travel for work. You know, even in the new world, whatever this is going to look like.
Yeah.
No, but eventually everyone's going to start traveling again. And, you know, I'm not, this is what I do. I got to travel. And people love traveling and people love going away. And so it's what I do for a living. And then I got to travel. You can do so much on Zoom and
FaceTime. When you travel, do you feel like even within the parameters of the schedule is going to be messed up or whatever it is, I'm going to be in a new place with unknown factors? Are you building schedules into there?
No, because I'm just going to stop doing what I do. Like when I would travel, I go to New York, you know, I stay at the Bowery and you go in the lobby and you go eat a snack at 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. That's keeping you up to 1.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stop doing all that shit.
Yeah.
You know, if I drink tea, make sure there's no caffeine in it, you know, and it's organic and not get jacked up at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And you can still have a meeting with someone, drink water.
Yeah.
Or a decaffeinated or whatever, no caffeine, you know. And just make lifestyle changes where I stop doing certain things and just maintain that and not think like, all right, I'm going to be bad once a week or once every 2 weeks. I got to just change.
Yeah.
And do the final process here.
Yeah.
In my body and my brain.
Yeah, that's another thing I struggle with, the idea of being bad, because I don't want it to be bad, because I find that when I do bad things, it's hard for me to get back to doing good things, you know? Does that make sense?
Totally, bro. Totally. Yeah.
So I try to figure out a way that certain things I don't do mostly are okay to do occasionally, because when I think of them as bad, then I'm like doing this bad thing and then I'm like just on a bad path again. It's a mind fuck. It really is a lot about how your brain is processing this shit.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you have to do it yourself and you're alone doing it. But I always had incredible people pushing me, I found the best of the best, you know, trained people to train me and all that kind of stuff. And that's what you got to do to like get through this.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's easy to sell, you know, here's the wonder diet, here's the this, but it, you know, and make, I'll just do the X, Y, and Z. But it really, as you know, it's not that. There's so many detail to losing hundreds of pounds.
Right.
And changing your lifestyle. This is what I went into this quarantine with. And that's why I was like, all right, like I just bought a house and I had a house I was renting during construction times, and a buddy of mine lives in it. Everyone's like, stay there. And I was like, no. Well, one, I got quarantined, you know, so I had to stay by myself. But two, I was like, I want to be alone. I want to go through this myself and I want to set up my new systems where I'm going to wake up and get into a routine and a lifestyle where you asked for a trick earlier. Another one is, you know, it's just moving. I don't know if you went through this, but like, you know, I like to move 2-3 hours a day. You know, if you just go outside, you hike, you find a set of stairs, you go up and down, whatever it is. I just got a treadmill in my house, put in, you know, do the treadmill for an hour or two. And you can do this stuff slow. You don't have to do, you know, 9 miles an hour jogging or sprinting. You can do a two and a half mile an hour walk.
Yeah.
Or a 3 mile an hour walk. And you're moving and you're circulating your blood and your brain and you're in the outdoors and, you know, you're touching nature, and that really helped me. I would do hikes around my neighborhoods. I would go to whatever local track there was, and you know, you can sit on the phone, you can work. There's no excuse.
Yeah.
So that just constantly, you don't need a trainer. You don't need, you do. I know you work out hard, but, and I'm going to start, but to lose the weight initially, you don't need any of that at all.
No, you don't. You don't need, I mean, look, the reality is,
you need to be drinking water and eating good.
If you just did something as simple as eat exactly what you've been eating, but cut it in half or cut out a quarter of it, you'll probably lose weight. You know, I mean, it could be that rudimentary. Cut out sugar, go even broader, cut out, you know, there's diets where it's like cut out carbohydrates. That's huge. You're going to lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
You don't need anything to do that. But it is helpful to have people. I should rephrase it because I am a relativist on this. I find it helpful to have people to talk to about it, to set plans with, because I can constantly change shit in my head and go, my plan is X, and 10 minutes later, my plan is Y, and 10 minutes later, it's Z, and then it's W, and it can change constantly. It can fluctuate. Writing it down might be helpful, or communicating it with another person might be helpful. But yeah, honestly, anyone can start today. It's not, there's a multitude of data online that you could look at, and, you know, but I think you're right. Find some stairs to walk up, go walk outside. You don't have to be preparing for a marathon.
No. And it's just, you know, you make these changes, but, you know, the biggest part for me, and I'll say this again and again and again, was the mental part of it.
Yeah.
You know, when I changed my health, it was great. But when I changed my mental health, that's when the weight stayed off. That's when it will stay off forever. That's when it flowed off really quickly. That's when I was happy about it flowing off versus, you know, as a former big guy, you're not happy during the process. You're miserable losing the weight. You don't want to lose the weight. You're fighting with yourself. You're, you know, the fat guy is eating the skinny guy in your head and all the stuff. And, you know, when I fixed my head, it just totally changed.
Yeah.
And you really can't understand it until you do that thing. But to beat it, you got to dive right into it.
Yeah.
And then you got to address what's one by one by one, all the things that are bothering you. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
And that makes the weight loss so much easier.
Change your brain.
Change your body.
Change your body. Set habits. And the change of the body will help with the change of the brain too, don't you think? They eventually will start to complement each other.
Yes, for sure. Do you experience that?
I think at first I was so lost that I was just kind of going to do whatever somebody suggested, somebody that I cared about suggested.
Did you get the stomach surgery?
No. I've only dieted. So I was jumped into it going like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. My wife gave me a plan. I followed the plan. And then the first initial success of losing 80 pounds was enough to go like, oh, I can do this.
Okay, so I got the stomach surgery. I got it after I lost 120 pounds.
Oh, wow.
You might say, why'd you do it then? I gained back a little bit of weight, so it wasn't like a straight line down. And I said to myself and my best friends, I said, if I ever gain back the weight in any way, not all the way back, I'll make a change. And this is after I started doing, you know, mental therapy and meditation. I started gaining a little bit of weight, and I said, all right, I'm going to go. So I just literally went and I didn't even talk to anyone about it. I just went and did it. And that was a huge help also, because it just was like, not only did I have the motivation and focus to get it done, but then I couldn't even if I wanted to in the beginning. Over time, your stomach grows back over 4 or 5 years, and you can eat shitty again. You can eat a lot of food. But at the beginning, it helps you right away.
Right.
So it helped kick me in. So no matter what, in the next 6 months, I wasn't eating anything bad. Because if you ate something bad, you get sick.
Right.
So yeah, so that helped a lot. I just started my foundation, which is cool. So the Beecher Foundation pays for people that can't afford stomach surgeries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I know. Because it's needed. Because a lot of people I help, they can't afford it.
Yeah.
And it's because sometimes when someone's, like you said, you were so out of control, I was so out of control. Sometimes the answer is like, all right, well, here's a crutch.
Yeah. Well, of course.
And it helps you get past the hump, and then you can figure everything else out.
I think anything we do, any diet, any plan, the surgery, it's all a tool for weight loss.
Like, I know people that got that balloon. Is that what it's called? When they tie up your stomach, they don't cut it. They tie it.
Like a sleeve? I know about sleeve.
No, sleeve is that's a tie. I forget. Let's call it the balloon. I don't remember. They like put something around your stomach and they take it off. And there's like a pump. It's like, I don't
know. So you feel full all the time, maybe?
Yeah. And I know people that have gotten it and had it taken off because they know they could.
Right.
That's why it's like really, it sounds scary, but it was scary. I went 4 times over being obese for 15 years to get the surgery. And I left the hospital or the surgery center each time, not having done it.
Wow.
I was such a pussy. But it was good. I mean, it helped, you know, me be me and my company thrive, me being fat and crazy. And,
yeah,
you know, but the timing when I needed to have it done was perfect. And then it was like a friend of mine went with me. I remember this girl, she was like yelling at me. And then she had the doctor drug me and I was like trying to run again. And then the fourth time I remember the drugs kicked in and I was knocked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a scary thing to do and want to do too. Cause you're cut. It's not about the surgery or like cutting yourself or like you're thinking about them going in you, all that kind of stuff. it's scary because you're getting cut off from the drug that you love, food.
Right.
And you know it's the end.
Yeah.
It's the end of your love affair with the dirty food, you know? And that's what was the scariest thing about the surgery. And you're like, I don't want to do it for that. That's the reason.
Yeah.
You're addicted to that drug and you know it's the end. That surgery decision is the end of that drug. And after I went through all the therapy and the changing of the lifestyle and all that, I said, you know what? Fuck it. I got to make this change because otherwise I'm just going to be 500 pounds miserable and dead.
Right.
And or dead.
Right. Yeah, that's a real interesting perspective because at the end of the day, you can stop doing a diet whenever. Like if the whatever it is that you're eating or you're doing that's contributing to being obese really does mean a lot to you, which I imagine it means a lot to people, meant a lot to me, then it's easy. Like, I'm not going to have this thing today, but if I decide to, I can. If I need it that bad, I can. But the minute you do that surgery, it's more permanent. So it's almost a scary thing to confront it in that way.
Yeah, it was scary. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm so happy I made the decision. I tell anyone they ask me or anyone I'm talking to. If I don't think they have it on their own, I say, look, this is my opinion. This is what I did. You make your own decision, but it's so good.
Yeah.
It was, for me, it was perfect timing, perfect everything.
And then how can people get a hold of you or apply if somebody wants to get that and they can't afford it? Like, how do they find out about that?
Well, I'll make it very, you know, I literally just set it up and all this stuff happened.
Okay.
With Corona and everyone getting quarantined, and they can go to my website, jeffbeecher.com.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll be on there.
Yeah.
And then the charity will become its own thing.
Yeah. I don't think they're even doing that right now.
No, like, there's nothing like it.
It's all.
And I got like really good hospitals signed on and doctors signed on to help too. And
yeah.
It's really cool. Some big celebrities are involved. You know, it's going to be dope.
That's amazing. I had a buddy who was set to get it. And I think he had thought about getting it a number of times and had also backed out and was going to get it, I guess, a week before we went on quarantine.
Oh, really?
And he was asking me, like, should I still do it? And I said, yeah, because...
Did he do it?
No, they canceled. Oh. Everything got canceled. And, but I think he was going to. And then they said, we're not doing this kind of procedure for a while. Or for however, I don't even... They didn't even give him a time frame. They just said, we have to cancel.
I was emceeing a Coachella a weekly. I mean, I had stomach surgery Saturday. That Friday, I was emceeing a Coachella.
How did that feel?
It was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I was also on liquid Vicodin from the surgery, but, you know, it was fine.
Yeah. You got through Coachella. Would you have been at Coachella this year?
Probably. Maybe. I go every year for work and stuff, but
right.
I don't know. Maybe.
You don't do a thing there, though, do you?
No, I don't do shows anymore.
Yeah.
We did a show that night.
All right. So you got your foundation, killing it in the... I also wonder how it is for people alone right now under quarantine. Like, is that extra hard?
You know, I'm just so used to it from between going to like the mental rehab and going to the, I call it my food rehab, but the vegan place in Florida, you know, I'm just used to the being alone part. So I don't mind it. You know, it's a really, it actually just gets me refocused and remotivated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's gotta be killing a lot of people. It's driving nuts. Drove me nuts, and I'm used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's how you live, and it's driving you nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for it could be important for people to make sure they connect with somebody every day, maybe, during this time. A lot of people are more alone now than they necessarily were before.
That's another one of my things. I reach out to three people every morning that are down.
Yeah.
Friends I know that are off.
Yeah, and be of service in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you have a very inspiring story.
Thanks, man. You do too.
Thank you. That was
helping
awesome.
Helping us both get our messages out to everyone.
Yeah. I think that foundation you're setting up is going to be really important.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah. I'm very excited about it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy.
Now for some Q&A. Michael writes, how do you calculate what macros you need for the different goals you have set, i.e. pure weight / fat loss, muscle building, maintaining? That's a great question, Michael. Thank you. Basically, the first macro I calculate is whatever my weight is, I eat 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. And after that, the calculation is just caloric. So if going to be doing fat loss, if I'm on a fat loss phase, then look at what my remaining calories are. And basically, a gram of protein is worth 4 calories, a gram of carbohydrates is worth 4 calories, and a gram of fat is worth 9 calories. And so I take my 260 grams of protein, I figure out what the calories are for that, I figure out how many calories I have left, and then I divvy that up between carbohydrates and fat. And I have found over the last year that for the kind of workouts I'm doing, I feel better with more carbohydrates than I do fat. But it, you can do whatever makes you feel good, basically. You can calculate those macros however you want, but it is all basically calories and how much energy my body requires, how much energy my body requires to lose weight. I don't want it to be so extreme that I'm losing muscle. And the first and primary source of fuel is going to be protein to repair the muscle that I have that I'm going to be damaging by lifting weights. That is how I calculate my macros. And then when I go on to maintenance, I don't need to increase my protein. I'm kind of maxed out on that. I just increase my carbs and fat. I haven't done muscle building yet. You guys will be the first to hear about it when I do. That will be an interesting journey. I wonder if I'll have a meltdown about gaining weight, because I will be gaining weight. It'll be very interesting. I can't wait to do that. Thanks for the question, Michael. If you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast, please submit it to AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.